Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Unbox. I'm so glad that you've decided to join us today. We have been gone this entire Christmas break, and we're excited to get back and to talk about how we can improve relationships, how we can improve our lives, how we can improve our workplaces, how we can unbox the power and the potential of every relationship we're a part of. I want to begin this year by having a conversation with you about some of the challenges and failures that I experienced because of my lack of maturity in my previous profession as a congregational pastor. Stick around as we unbox this wonderful subject. I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and relationship coach. And welcome to Unboxed, a frank and straightforward conversation about relationships. We're going to talk about family, church, workplace, and all other types of relationships. Join me for the next few moments as we unbox the power and potential of relationships and help you to live your best life. All right, come on back in, come on back in. So glad to have you. Do me a favor. Before we get started, would you please like, subscribe, and share? That's right. Like, subscribe, and share. And if you're listening to this via our podcast, then check out our website. It's www.swg-unbox.org. We're Seasoned with Grace Unbox, swg-unboxed.org. Okay, so as many of you know, before I went into nonprofit leadership, community policy advocacy, and being a leadership coach and creating a leadership peer support community, for the overwhelming majority of my life, for 22 plus years, I served as a pastor within the Seventh-day Adventist denomination. And I want to give you a little bit because every denomination has its unique way of doing things. The Seventh-day Adventist Church is one denomination that is headquartered in Washington, D.C. It is a global denomination in almost every country in the entire world. But in order to make leadership and management bite-sized, we have something called conferences. And so these conferences are broken into either territories or regions. For instance, I was in the Southwest Region Conference. The Southwest Region Conference covered Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico. Some of the conferences, when they're large enough, are named after a state. So, for instance, you have one conference called the Michigan Conference. Well, anyway, these various conferences are responsible for hiring pastors and assigning them to various congregations. And you may stay at within your congregation for 1 year. You may stay within your congregation for 25, 30 years. You know, it all depends on where the needs are, what the conference president, so the lead pastor for the entire conference, the one who is the lead administrator, is called a conference president. And the conference president makes determinations as to what pastors are assigned to what church and for how long. And of course, he doesn't just do it by himself. He works through what is called the conference committee. It is a committee of individuals that he shares his ideas and visions for, and then they make votes about who should be moved and where. And then there are other positions within the conference. For instance, there is a youth director who is responsible for helping churches to create strong youth programs, et cetera. And I'm not going to go through all of them. But anyway, that was the structure in which I worked. And it's always understood that when you first come in, you either A, work with another pastor who is mature and senior and seasoned, or you're sent to a small church in a small district to kind of get, for instance, I started off in a city called Camden, Arkansas. Bet you can't find it on a map without somebody giving you assistance. You know, so you start off small, and then over time you begin to move up. And if you really do an exceptional job, a couple of things happen. They'll bring you into the conference to work in the conference. As I just shared with you, there are different leadership positions there. Or you can ultimately become the conference president, the one who is responsible for the administration for the entire territory, for assigning and delegating where pastors go and things of that nature. So I had the wonderful opportunity of serving in several churches. I first started my ministry in Camden, Arkansas. When I left there, the conference sent me to the seminary and paid for it. So I got my Master's of Divinity. After I left the seminary, I was signed to a church in Alexandria, Louisiana. I went from Alexandria, Louisiana to Fort Worth, Texas. From Fort Worth, Texas, I went to Charlotte, North Carolina. And from Charlotte, North Carolina, I came back to Louisiana. And from Louisiana, Baton Rouge, I'm sorry, I came back to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, had a phenomenal time there. And from Baton Rouge, I went to Denver, Colorado. And that is where I retired. And that is where I'm currently located as we speak. Now, here's the catch. Many of the churches, not many, but there's a significant number of Seventh-day Adventist churches that also have church schools. And when I came out of the seminary, my wife and I came out together and we had two children. We had my daughter we had one daughter who was 6 years old, and we had another daughter who was 12 years old. And we were sent to a church that had a church school. And I knew that if I could be successful at this church, it would open up opportunities for me to serve in other capacities. In other words, if I do well in Alexandria, Louisiana, there's a large possibility that I might end up in a city like Fort Worth, Texas, where I was in Alexandria, Louisiana. I had three churches. I had two churches in the city of Alexandria. I had one church in Natchitoches, Louisiana. But I knew that if I did a good job in Alexandria, ultimately I could be transferred to a church somewhere in Dallas or in another major city, Houston or wherever it may be, which means I would only have one congregation. And once you get to the place where you have one congregation, then they start moving you to larger congregations again until you're at the place that you want to be. And of course, everybody wants to be in a larger city. It gives you opportunities. It gives your wife and family opportunities, et cetera. And so the challenge that I had in Alexandria, Louisiana, is that it was just not a place that was conducive for education, because in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, many of our churches also have schools that the church operates. Now, we have some phenomenal schools. A good friend of mine, Pastor Trevor Kinlock, did his PhD at Howard University, and he studied how well African-American boys do when they attend an African-American Seventh-day Adventist school. And his research bore out that, Seventh-day Adventist education, especially African-American education, is very beneficial to African-American young men and boys. Well, that was not the case. I was in a small town with a small school that had one teacher and had grades kindergarten all the way through the eighth grade. So you can kind of imagine how that looked. Now, here's the catch. I knew about it when I went into it. I knew that that was the situation, that that was the setup, that I was going into an environment where I would have multiple churches, where I would have multiple churches, and I would have a school that would have that was small and that would not be able to adequately educate my children. Now, I want you to catch on to this, but I also understood that this was necessary in order for me to progress. Now, here's one more caveat that I want to throw into this. It is expected that if you are the pastor of a church, it only makes sense, if you're the pastor of a church and your church has a church school and you have children who are school age, that you will send your children to that church school. And it only makes sense because if you think about it, how in the world are you going to build up a school that you don't even think is good enough for your kids to attend? Hey, everybody, let's support our church school, but it's so horrible, I'm not going to send my kids there, but I want you all to send your kids there, and I want you to tell people in the community to send their kids there. How about that one? So it's expected you're going to send your children to the church school. Now, as I shared before, I'm looking today to share with you my failures as a leader, my failures within my family, my failures even to the church and to the community. Because one of the things that I wanted to do, and this is very important because I want you to understand that I'm taking responsibility for my decisions. One of the things that I wanted to do was I wanted to progress in the Seventh-day Adventist denominational structure. And so I decided to accept the call to a small city. I decided to accept the call to a church that had a church school. And I decided in order to keep that church and to expand my opportunities to advance in the Seventh-day Adventist denomination, that I would send my children to that school. And that school was not adequate, did not have the adequate resources to educate my children. So let me put it even simpler for you. I made a decision to sacrifice my children's education for my own personal career advance and progression. Let me say that one more time. I made a decision to sacrifice, or at the least hinder, my children's academic advancement for my own personal career advancement. Now, the reason that I'm saying it like this is because oftentimes, and I used to subscribe to this thinking, oftentimes individuals who are in a similar position to me, who are either A, already established, but for whatever reason are sent to a church that has a failing church school, or who are young, has a young family, are sent to a church that has a failing church school. And the argument is, boy, these bishops, these conference presidents, these conference committees, they don't even care about their pastors. They'll send you to a small, fledgling, failing school. They don't care nothing about us. We're in this thing all by ourselves. And so then, sending someone with small children to a small school that doesn't have the resources to adequately educate them is seen as a failure on the part of the conference president and the conference administration / conference committee. How about we do this? How about we flip this whole paradigm? I want to do that. I want to flip this entire paradigm. And what I want to do is I want to think about it from another perspective. I want to think about it from this perspective. And today's going to be a longer broadcast. We're going to give it to you in two parts. So just bear with us. I want to share it to you from this perspective. What if I had developed a series of guiding principles for my life, my career, my family, and my children's education and future? What if I had said, I will not accept a job in any city that does not have the adequate ability to educate my children? I need to go somewhere where my children will be adequately educated. I'm coming out of the seminary. I have my Master's of Divinity. You know, in a couple of years, I'm going to begin my doctoral studies. What if I had those guiding principles? And what about if a conference president had come to me and said, Robert, we want to send you to a church in this city, and the church doesn't have a really strong school, but we want you to go there anyway, and we want you to build that school, and we want you to support the school by sending your children there as an example and an encouragement to everyone else to send their children there as well. We're expecting that of you. We're expecting that of you, for you to send your children there and to build up the school. What if the conversation had went like this? Mr. President, I thank you so much for the opportunity to serve. However, I have made a decision that I'm not going to send my children to a school that is not adequate in educating them, especially in their early and formative years. I need to send them to a school where they can be properly trained and have access to those resources. And the city that you're sending me to, the church that you're sending me to, doesn't have that. Now, the flip of that would have been, well, that's the job. And either you accept it or you move on. You find somewhere else to work, or see if there's another conference somewhere else that'll hire you or whatever, but that's what we're offering. And imagine if I had said this: thank you so very much for the opportunity, but I'm going to go ahead and decline, and I'm going to seek employment elsewhere. And if I can't find employment in the church, I'm going to find another line of work to pursue. But I need to be in a city or in a location that has the adequate education for my young children. Notice the flip here. The onus is not on the institution, the bureaucracy, the organization to look out for the welfare of my children. the onus is not on the organization or the institution, the company or the corporation to try to figure out what's in the best interest of my family. As a leader, I take full responsibility for my decisions. We live in a day in society where it's everybody's fault but mine. But one aspect of authentic leadership is taking full responsibility for the decisions that you make. I chose, you know, there are a lot of lawyers out there, but I chose to be the type of lawyer that spends 18, 20 hours working each day, neglecting my children, et cetera. I made the decision. Oh, it was so demanding. The senior partners are always making us do this and the other. I chose to stay in that environment. It's not their fault. I chose to stay at a hospital or a clinic where they had these demands that impacted my health and that impacted my family. I could have left and pursued something else, but I made the decision because when it's all said and done, I am the master of my fate. I ultimately am responsible for my own decisions. Opportunities are put before me, and I made the decision to put my career before my family, to put my own advancement in front of my children's education. Now, I'm going to have to live with that for the rest of my life because that's literally what I did. That's not some, you know, some illustration. I literally did that. And I've had these conversations with my wife. I've had these conversations with my kids because that is exactly what I did. Where I have grown and where I want to encourage you to grow, where I have grown is I have grown in a place where I have come to accept responsibility for the fact that those are the decisions that I've made. It's not the conference's fault. It's not the church's fault. Oh, I'm never going to know what those churches, them churches, all they do this, the churches, all they do that church. No. I made the decision to do X. I made the decision to do Y. I made the decision to do Z. It was my decision. I could have walked away. I could have, now there would have been consequences on either side, but I have decided that losing money, losing whatever else is less of a consequence than my children's education because these are the principles that I live by. And whatever happens at the end of the day, I will stand up as a leader and say, I am responsible. That is one of the lessons that I learned being a pastor, that no matter what, if I die and my soul be lost, it's nobody's fault but mine. If I choose my church over my family, that's on me. If I decide that the company is more important than my children, it's not the company's fault. That's on me. I have to be responsible for my decisions. We'll talk more about this the next time. Have a great day.
Seasoned with Grace Unboxed also provides healthy relationship training and leadership development for businesses, churches, and community organizations. For a free consultation to discuss your team's needs, please contact us at our website at swg-unboxed.org. That's swg-unboxed.org.